Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. I'd like to say thank you for listening. Your interest in what's happening in local music is why we do what we do, and without your support, it wouldn't happen. If you enjoy Local Exposure or some of the other programs and podcasts that you get from 91.7 WVXU, consider becoming a member of the station. Visit WVXU.org and click on the big red button that says Donate. Your contribution of any amount whatsoever helps us continue the mission of bringing you great, locally sourced radio and internet content. Comprador returns with their second full-length release, a massive 19-track double album called Downstream that is full of insightful and explosive music. The band also has an all-new lineup that includes John Delvaux, Brianna Kelly, and Corey Waddell, joining primary songwriter Charlie Dardan. Charlie and Brianna join me in the studio to talk about the new lineup, performing live, the songwriting process, and how a piano on Craigslist affected the development of the album. Joining me today are Charlie Dardan and Brianna Kelly from the band Comprador. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Charlie, did you found Comprador? Is this technically your band? Because it's been around for a while.
Yeah, I guess so. At this point, I've always been the primary songwriter and have done all the promotional stuff and booking, and it's moved into more of that within the past couple of years. But we've also expanded the live lineup to a four-piece. It was a trio for a while.
Yeah, the whole lineup has changed.
Yeah.
For a while, you had Aaron Collins. You had, I don't even know, like a revolving door of musicians playing with you. And now you essentially have three-fourths of Soffin now joining you as the new incarnation of Comprador.
Yeah, it was kind of Aaron on drums and me on guitar, and then various bassists for the first couple of years of the band. When Aaron left in 2016, I couldn't really think of like a suitable replacement on drums, so I just moved over to drums. John had been playing bass, so he moved to guitar, and then you joined on guitar and keys, and we had our friend Corey start playing bass.
It just seemed to be a perfect fit. You already had Corey. You already had his number. You knew how to reach him.
Yeah.
So how many albums now has Comprador put out?
The one we're coming out with in May is really like our second full-length. And the May album will be a double album. It's like 75 minutes or so. We did one previous full-length through in-store recordings out of Indianapolis. That was like a 45-minute LP called Pollinator. And we have, I think, three EPs up on the Bandcamp that we just kind of self-released.
Well, this album has 19 tracks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of music here. How long has it taken you to put all this together?
Some of it came together really quickly, and some of it had been sitting around for a couple of years. The oldest song, which we've been playing live, but that was actually from 2012 when I first moved here. And I was in a Halloween band that did a bunch of Black Sabbath covers. So I was playing in that down tuning, a few steps down from standard. And I wrote a song and then never felt like using that tuning live for anything. So it just sat around for, I guess, 5 years. And then I finally recorded it for this album. But some of this stuff I was just like writing the week that I started drum tracking last April. So 4.5 years.
Brianna, again, it's really good to see you again,
good to
have
you
back.
You
tell me about how you connected with Charlie and made this project happen.
Oh, boy. I think we just kind of kept running into each other, and then we were talking about, like, doing some music collaborative stuff. I was, like, coming out of a different place in my life where I was just like, I need to meet new people. I need to start new projects. I need to, like, get my feet wet with some other stuff. And so we had kind of connected initially, and Charlie lived in Northside, and I was in Norwood, and so I was, like, coming down and, like, hanging out at shows. And then I think after just a show, Charlie introduced me to, like, a bunch of new people, people that had been in bands with him in previous iterations. And that's how I met, like, John and Corey and everybody who's in Soften. And then I think, like, a little later, it must have been, like, 6 or 8 months into all that, after, like, meeting all those people, that I was like, can I play in Comprador? Like, can I just join your band? Because I think Aaron had quit, and then there was, like, you were going through some transitions at that point.
Yeah, at that point, like, it was just a two-piece with me and John, essentially. The most recent EP we did was just me and John tracking everything, kind of trying to get something out there to continue the project after Aaron left.
By John, yeah, I think you mean John Delveau, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing guitar currently. Yeah, I think maybe that was Northside Music Festival. It was something at the Tavern. And then we all went and, like, hung out in Billy Hodges' kiddie pool.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
I was like, can I hang out with you guys?
Because
I was just following him around like a lost puppy.
Because John Delveau and Corey Waddell and I were all in Sun Country a few years ago. A bunch of those members still live in Northside. And we all play in various projects and hang out with each other. So I think that was how John and Corey and I first started playing music together.
Brianna, I'm really curious about, you already play in Soften, you already have your own solo music that you perform. When do you have time to be in Comprador?
Oh boy. Well, I don't know. I guess I just like to keep busy with music stuff. Like, I wanted to join new projects that would challenge me because I was starting to take guitar playing more seriously. And so when I, like, asked Charlie to be in Comprador, it was kind of like a step out for me to improve my guitar playing skills, because Charlie writes just brilliant, complex parts. And then for him to take a backseat on kind of the drums and, like, still to be leading a project like this, it was inspiring to me to, like, I remember watching Comprador, like, a couple years ago and being like, holy smokes, like, this is incredible. Like, he was, like, one of my favorite guitar players I'd ever seen live. And just, like, that energy and, like, vivaciousness. And it's good for me to stay busy and, like, challenge myself, especially as I'm trying to, like, grow in my musicianship.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about the songwriting process. You know, we already said there's 19 songs, and listening to this album Downstream, there's a tremendous diversity of sound throughout these songs. How do you get from point A to point Z in this project?
I think part of that comes from the writing process taking so long, because some of the older material I was still writing for just, like, a guitar-driven power trio, like guitar, drums, bass. And I went through a pretty long, like a 6-month period of writer's block in early 2016. And at the end of that, I don't know if I was thinking of it consciously, but a piano popped up on Craigslist. A couple of friends helped me move it into my house. So I ended up writing and arranging a lot of the tracks on the piano while I was figuring out how to play it, sort of. So the piano is still in some of the stuff on the album, but I think I used it as, like, a compositional tool on everything. And that was really helpful in terms of just, like, expanding which kind of chords and inversions and progressions and stuff I used, because the shapes, like, present themselves differently, and a chord or on a piano will resonate differently on a guitar, and it has a different feel, so I just ended up writing a lot of more styles than I typically would on just electric guitar in a trio. I guess the other part of it was, previously I'd always tried to write with the intention of it being, like, performable by the live trio, whereas with this one I just got out there as far as I could because I wasn't sure what we were going to end up actually including in our live sets off the album. Like, there's a lot of, like, synth experimentation, octave shifted guitar, and weird plug-in experiments, and like 16
clarinet
vocal tracks
and, like,
of me singing, yeah, and clarinet. And I played some, like, I got a flute in December, and that's on there.
So it sounds like this is the Sgt. Pepper of Comprador.
Sort of, yeah.
If you don't mind, I want to listen to a track. I'm going to pick the first one because it's of the 19 songs. This is the one that most resonated with me, and it's the song Kiss Off. And I like this one because it's really aggressive, and it has almost a throwback grunge. I hope this isn't an insult, but almost an Alice in Chains kind of sound to it. It's really kind of fun to listen to.
We've gotten that a couple of times. I think it's from, like, the fifths I'll use in the vocal harmonies sometimes, because Lane Staley and Jerry Cantrell, is he the guitarist? I think so, they would do that with their voices pretty often, too.
All right, well, this is Kiss Off from Compradore from their album Downstream. I want to ask you also about the production of the album. Who recorded it? Who produced it? How was it all done?
It was mostly me and John Delvaux just in our house. The bulk of the recording I had a long weekend in April because I requested some time off to hopefully play Mac Rock, which is a festival in Virginia, but then we didn't get in. So I didn't have anything to do for a couple of days. So I set up my drum kit in our basement, and John set up microphones, and I just played drums for 72 hours. And the rest of it was mostly me overdubbing stuff in the basement and a couple of things I did up in John's room with him supervising. Like if I was having a lot of trouble nailing a vocal take, I would do stuff up there. I think he sampled some of that.
His little sampling keyboard,
yeah. Which isn't on the album, but it was funny to listen to while we were working on it. And I did like one or two guitar tracks at our friend John Kuntz's studio.
I have a sneaking suspicion that every house in Northside has a recording studio in it somewhere.
Basically.
How does it feel to you, the difference between the recorded sound and the live sound of Compradour?
It's a really interesting challenge trying to get the impact of the recordings in a different way with the live ensemble, because the arrangements will change, but we're usually still trying to get like the same visceral force of the recordings. I kind of just leave it up to the discretion of the other band members.
When I first started playing with Charlie, I was, okay, so like, what's the part? And I was like really eager to learn the part or something. And then after a while, it was just, well, here's freedom to kind of listen through the track and like interpret my own parts from it in some ways, even though I've like tried to stick as closely to Charlie's compositions as possible. It's been fun to figure stuff out and to be challenged in that way.
Was it difficult for you to take that backseat of moving to the drums and not having that forefront position?
I never really thought of it as a backseat until until this interview where we keep saying backseat. It was a challenge for me because it's all acoustic elements. I can't really rely on, like on electric guitar, I can boost the signal with gain pedals and use delay and stuff to fill out the sound. But just drumming and singing, it's all personal performance, and I can't like use technology a whole lot to augment what I'm doing. I think if anything, it's more enjoyable performing live because it's like a really physical experience and requires me to like get into a certain zone or I start goofing up really bad.
There is a lot of physicality to playing drums and singing at the same time. Are there any particular songs or moments that are a real challenge for you to do that live?
The tune I mentioned, the really old song when I was in the Black Sabbath cover band and kind of wrote some stuff in that style, is pretty difficult for me to hit the really high notes at the very top of my register and also be whacking the drum kit as hard as I can at the same time.
I want to ask you about the album Downstream as a whole. To me, it reads a bit like a concept album, not only because there's so many tracks, but because it has a flow to it. It seems to go from more melodic or even dark and gothic to a heavier edge, and there does seem to be an underlying narrative. Is that conscious? Is that purposeful?
There is like a loose narrative arc to it. Part of it was intentional, just trying to write within a theme, and then part of it was like trying to put a framework onto it after everything was pretty much written and figuring out, like, how can I sequence this so it does kind of follow a progression instead of jumping all over the place.
Well, you have a song called Downstream that appears twice in the album. You have another song called Clenched Fist that also has a second part of the album. So there's sort of a before and after sort of effect to it.
I always really like on albums when a band or an artist will revisit a motif or like a lyrical idea in multiple songs, but like approach it from different angles. Because I really wanted to do something ambitious, like a double album, and that was an easy way to pad out the running time by reprising melodic ideas and lyrics.
The album's being released by Dark Circles Records, which is a label out of Chicago. How did you connect with them?
I followed Brian McCabe, I've been working with him there. I think he played in Homemade Drugs, who are a local band here. So that's how I knew him. I'd been playing bass in a band called Amanda's Scanner, and we were planning on releasing something through Dark Circles, and that lineup kind of disintegrated, but I maintained contact with Brian, and I was working on this at around the same time. So I approached him about it, and he was interested.
So you have your album release party, May 18th at Motor, and you're playing with a band called Lipstick Fiction. Could you tell me about this band?
So you have Marissa on vocals, Spencer Webb on guitar, Max Vignola on bass, and Tim Miller on drums. It's like aggressive, melodic punk rock.
So if someone wants to get a listen of Downstream, how would they do that?
We have a couple of singles online right now. I think two are on SoundCloud and one's on Spotify. Once it's May 18th, the rest of the album will be available digitally. Dark Circles will have a digital version on their Bandcamp, and we'll put the 19 tracks up on Spotify too.
You keep referring to this as an album. Will there be a vinyl version?
We'll just do one copy. And then we'll have it up for sale, and like a horrible sociopathic executive will buy it, but then his assets will get seized by the federal government and it'll be up for grabs again.
Right. Charlie Dardan, Brianna Kelly, thank you so much for coming in. It's good to see you again. And thanks for being part of Local Exposure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Comprador's album Downstream will be available May 18th from Dark Circles Records. The song you're listening to now is called Waves Hiss Forward from the upcoming release. If you like what you're hearing and want to find out more about the album, the band, or their upcoming shows, you can find links to all of that at wvxu.org/lx. The intro music in this episode was by Scott Holmes and is available from the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. Today's episode was recorded by Josh Elstro and produced by me, Jim Nolan. You can find more great local music stories when you subscribe to Local Exposure at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to take the time to leave a comment or a review on Apple Podcasts, that can help others find us too.
Until next time.